All right. Habs fans, hockey fans, a brand new episode of the Curfew Boys podcast. It's been a bit of a while since we've released our last episode. Might be short staffed tonight, but it is, I guess, the family edition. It's myself, Sammy, with my cousin Chris right now.
Hey now.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Very good.
Good. Yeah. I'm doing okay. Listen, you know when they say it's the most wonderful time of the year, whoever said that probably didn't have either had too much money that and he didn't have to worry about anything, or I don't know. I just find like it's the most stressful time of the year as well. And
it's pretty brutal. It's been several weeks. Look, you're out in Vaudreuil, so the bridge alone is enough for it to be the most disastrous time of the year.
That fucking bridge. Whoever lives in the Montreal area knows there's a specific bridge between the island of Montreal and like the western side of the greater Montreal area. Like this particular fucking bridge is just causing so much chaos and traffic for the locals, that narrowing down to just one lane from three lane to one because there's just so much repairs that need to be done. Anyways, this fucking bridge is going to be the death of a lot of us here on this side of the island, and I hope they blow it up and restart brand fucking new, or just isolate us from the rest of the island, and we'll just find a way around it, I guess. But whoever came up with the song "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year" probably had enough money to not worry about buying Christmas gifts and did not live in an area where it fucking snowed and was cold.
Yeah, you know those like Christmas movies where there's like less than a centimeter on the ground and it's just nice, but it's not enough to inconvenience you. Meanwhile, it's just I don't know if it's just us, maybe the way our family thinks, but I hear that song and all I picture is fucking chaos everywhere, just car crashes and fucking disasters everywhere. Which is, there's something clearly wrong with me, but just
no. But that's something like a show, like a comedy show, like South Park would do. It's the most wonderful time. People screaming and chaos and fire and explosions, and the only time I love hearing that song is, I don't know if TSN does it anymore, but every time they promote the World Juniors. Every time they promote when they promote the World Juniors during the month of December, they bring that song and they show highlights of past tournaments, and like especially for Canada, the Crosby goal, the John Tavares goal to tie it up, Jordan Eberle scores to tie it up against Russia. The Jonathan Toews when
soon to be the Connor Bedard one from last year,
dude. Connor Bedard, that game against Slovakia too was absolutely. So like, I think that's the only time when I hear that song, and if I were to see that commercial, I would absolutely love it. But it's that time of year where last minute Christmas shoppers stress out, but then once you are with family, like you get to notice that it's all worth it in the end. I mean, it's Christmas. It's
worth it. Once you close out the other savages on the other side of the front door, everything is good. Everything is really, really good. Just a reminder, people, just let's just Curfew Boys public service. Let's just ask everyone, let's not even go for world peace. Let's just keep our shit, keep our cool, keep ourselves in line, be thoughtful. The other guy merge in front of you, but if you're going to be the one who's doing the merging, then get the fuck in the lane quick, Lee, and don't make me wait, you son of a bitch. But anyways, that's the time of the year that we're going into, and pardon the French, but welcome to December, folks.
Before I get this episode started, I do want to dedicate this episode to a man that I've known for over 20 years, who's the father of my best friend that passed away shockingly this week. And I just want to dedicate this episode to him. He's a great, great, great man. Considered him like an uncle. It was a guy that you know, you could talk to him about sports. Love debating about the Montreal Canadiens with him whenever we would meet up with my buddy and his family. And it's just, I'm still in denial. I still like can't believe it, but I dedicate this episode to him and to the family of my best friend Alex. Obviously, our love and thoughts and prayers are to him. And I know the rest of the Curfew Boys send their thoughts and prayers. They know Alex as well. We all grew up together in the same area, in the same neighborhood, went to the same high school. So I dedicate this episode to Alex's father, and may God rest his soul. And I really hope he's at peace. And there's really not much I could say about that, but except we all loved him. He was a great man. We're gonna love him. We all love him, and we're definitely gonna miss him. So I hope wherever his soul is, I hope he guides the Canadians one day to the promised land and bring a whole fan base to the ultimate place of happiness. So rest in peace. We love you, and we're definitely gonna miss you. Okay. A very interesting month of December for the Montreal Canadiens. And for a while, we were questioning, what's the identity of this team?
We still are questioning what the identity of the team is.
I think we have the current identity of this team. So we're going to call this episode 60-Minute Hockey, okay? And the reason why we're calling this episode 60-Minute Hockey, just 60 minutes, okay? Just think of the show. You know that stupid fucking show, 60 Minutes, that my mother used to love watching because...
One of those stupid ticking
clock. Yeah, with exactly. Now, the reason why we've decided to call this episode 60 Minutes is because it's something the Montreal Canadiens cannot do yet on a consistent level. It's something the Montreal Canadiens cannot do game in, game out. They're not there yet. They're not a 60-minute hockey team. And I think, for now, I think that's the identity of this team. For now.
Yeah. Young team. We talked about it how many times? Emotion. Mm-hmm. Still figuring their shit out.
Mm-hmm.
But God damn it, it's either they show up early. Like, yesterday was the first time that we got treated to 3 goals in the first period. Whole season. So that was nice.
Yep.
They show up early. And then they fuck up. They drop the ball. Or they drop the ball and then they're playing catch up for the rest of the game. So you're 100% right in saying that it's one or the other, never in between. And seldom do we actually get a game where they play, I'm going to say even 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, let's give them 10 minutes grace. Let's give them 1/6 of the game where they play maybe a little bit less well. Fine. But Jesus, it's rare that we actually get 50 minutes of solid, consistent hockey.
It's exactly that. And I think it goes back all the way to... the Saturday game against Detroit, where they lost 5-4 in overtime. At that point, they were having a bit of this reputation that they don't start off games well. But fuck, they're going to fight to catch up. And that's kind of been the identity of since Marty came in. Like, he's going to get everything out of his players to the point where more times than not, this team was able to fight back. And they did it. And they did it against Detroit a few Saturdays ago. But the thing is, I think we've all come to realize, and I think even the teams come to realize that, like, you keep playing like that, you're going to burn yourself out early, and you're going to risk, or you're going to up your chances of getting hurt even more.
Even more. Like, I don't know how they get hurt even more at this point in time, but yeah. It's already showing. We can make the argument that it's already showing. Let's mm-hmm. put Kirby Dach aside, because that was early on in the season.
Yep.
You know, too early for that sort of thing. But
now we got two more.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got two more forward.
Like flies again.
We got Alex Newhook out for what, 10 to 12 weeks?
Yeah.
And now we have Tanner Pearson out 4 to 6 weeks. And to think about Pearson, like, I get it. I don't want to see anybody getting injured. But Tanner Pearson's a player that's just here to fill in a spot, maybe provide some veteran leadership. He's probably going to be gone next year. So, I mean, like, the level of importance in terms of where the rebuild is going, unfortunately, I don't consider Tanner Pearson there like a Kirby Dach. And now even with, like, an Alex Newhook. Alex Newhook was brought in to this team to be part of the rebuild. And, you know, he was showing top six potential. He really was. Now that he's out, Tanner Pearson's out, we're kind of stuck a little bit of the same situation like we were last year. Like, the only difference is right now, like, Slafkovský's still there, Cole's still there, and, you know, Caden Gooley's still healthy, thank God for now. But look, Jordan Harris has got injured, but he's going to be coming back in the next 10 days or so, and we'll get to that later on in this episode. But this team's just, they're just overall, they're not there yet, okay? Now, after that overtime loss against Detroit, where, you know, they played a heck of a third period. Up to that game, the Canadiens were known to be a third period team. That did, like, for some reason at that game, they up to that point, they seemed to have been playing their best hockey in the third period. And it's that Marty effect of, you know, never quit, never give up. Then you go to Seattle. No, actually, you don't go to Seattle. The game against Seattle, I was there. I was lucky to be in attendance. And I think that was the most perfect game the Canadiens played almost all year that ended in a win. That started with a lead, and it ended with a lead. They never gave up the lead. That game against Seattle was, from start to finish, was perfect. You take away one shift from, ironically enough, Tanner Pearson's last game with the Canadiens before he got hurt. And the last game he scored a goal, which I got to see. And when he scored that goal, he let out such a fucking scream. Like, you could tell, like, it was a bit of a weight off his shoulders. And there's a couple of players that could use that weight off their shoulders too, and we're going to get to them later. But that game from start to finish was perfect. It was just that one shift when Seattle scored their first goals, because the Monahan, Gallagher, I think it was Monahan, Gallagher, and Pearson, they were on for over 2 minutes, got caught with two icing calls, and then they were just gassed.
Yeah.
And Seattle scored the goal. Then Seattle got another power play goal towards the end. We got a bit of a scare, and then fucking Josh Anderson scores his first goal of the season, empty netter. At that point, I didn't give a shit. None of us cared how he got it. Just the fact that he takes a shot and it goes in net, that's all the guy needs. But anyways, we'll get to him later too, because, like, there's just I want to talk about the team first, and then we'll get to the specific players. But that game against Seattle was like the last time that, at least in the month of December, that was a 60-minute hockey game. Montembeau just signed an extension. He plays that game. He showed he earned his contract of $3 million. Okay. I don't even want to talk about the game against LA, because the Kings are such a well-oiled machine. There's no point. And the Canadiens and all that, despite,
they didn't play badly. They didn't play badly in that game.
They did not, actually. They just, the floodgates opened in the third period. Otherwise, the Canadiens were only down 1-0 at the end of the first, and then 2-0 at the end of the second, I believe. As best of my memory.
I think it was only 1-0 after the first, and, like you're saying, 2-0 at the end of the second. I think you're right. Then we went on to Buffalo. Oh, mic issues
again. You can still hear me though.
Yeah, perfectly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the game that's against Buffalo is another example
of them shitting the bed. it was 2-0.
Yeah.
It was 2-0, and it took them all the way to overtime, took them to shootouts.
Yep.
Obviously, there's a little appreciation at the end of it all because we got to see Slafkovský do what he did, and it was very, very rewarding.
Are you not entertained?
Oh, it was great.
Are you not entertained? That was beautiful. That was beautiful. Okay, look, we got a few players we got to talk about individually. There's obviously Josh Anderson. There's definitely Juraj Slafkovský. There's definitely a defenseman we got to talk about who got sent to Laval. Dare we not mention his name just yet, but absolutely. Again, it was a Buffalo game. They started well. They couldn't close it out. They had the lead. They gave it up. Okay? Nashville was a weird fucking game. It was an odd game. It was probably the most boring game of the season for now. Like it felt so uneventful. It was weird. It was a weird fucking game.
Yep. No, it was basically like the first 10 minutes of the Montreal Pittsburgh game yesterday, but for the whole game. I don't know if you watched the first 10 minutes of the Montreal Pittsburgh game, but it was a goddamn bore. It was horrible.
The first 10 minutes? I was at the game yesterday against Pittsburgh.
Was it 10 minutes? Because even Pierre Hood was just like, well, not much going on.
Well, dude, the first period was they had a 3-1 lead. The second period was like,
No, not the whole first period, because they had a great end to the first period. But I think for like the first 7 to 10 minutes, it was absolutely, I think both teams had like one shot on net. Okay, that's not true. It took 7 minutes. So it took 7 minutes, roughly 6:24 exactly. That's when Savard scored. Mm-hmm. And then the next goals all came 12 minutes, 13 minutes, 15 minute marks. So it was all in the back half.
Well, the first period, I have to tell you, it was pretty entertaining. And again, they're slowly turning the tide in the sense that they're starting strong now. Most of the games. But they're not there yet. They're not there to maintain a lead.
Yeah. And the discipline is still not there either. Because the discipline is why Pittsburgh was able to come back.
The Slafkovský call, I mean, yeah, he got his stick. Yeah, it was a bit of a lazy play, but I don't know. I felt like it was one of those calls where like we're gonna give Pittsburgh a chance. Yeah. I don't know. Even the Kovacevic interference, questionable. But at the end of the day, your special teams have to do their job. Like yesterday.
Overtime 4-on-3. What the fuck?
Overtime 4-on-3, and you have 2.5 minutes left in the game and you get a power play.
Yeah.
You should be closing that out. And the power play is so inconsistent. Like, I don't get it.
Okay, hold up, because this has been something that I've been waiting to discuss. I don't care who they put there. I know he's getting points. I don't want him on the first unit of the power play, passing to Cole Caulfield. His name is Mike Matheson, wonderful human being. So happy for him to be a part of this organization. But Jesus Christ, what I fail to understand is how a whole roster of freaking players cannot find an open Cole Caulfield every single time. Cole is becoming a fucking passer on the power play. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not your playmaker. He's supposed to be getting into shots. And I find Mike Matheson cannot find that goddamn pass. Suzuki, I know Suzuki's got both the pass and shot threat.
Yeah.
But he's not been able to, they've been covering that. Because Suzuki figure, he's going to be at that right face-off circle. He's going to have to pass it completely across to make that pass to Caulfield. Very hard to do. Not always going to happen. So it ends up coming back to whoever's on the back end. And on the back end, holy shit, Mike Matheson was not made to make that pass to Cole Caulfield. And Justin Barron, that's another, he's on the second unit. Yeah. Justin Barron, Mr. Fumbles a lot, and the blue line, whenever they're on the really? Fucking power play, I want them gone off the power play.
Well, no, you kind of, but at the, I still think you need Justin Barron on the power play.
Oh, sad. Why? Come on, make an argument for your buddy Gooley.
I am about to. You got to give me that chance. I don't know why he's not given a chance on the power play. I really don't. I don't know. And unfortunately, right now, you have to use Mike Matheson because he's our best defenseman. I'm still not convinced that he's a quarterback out there. I'm really not. And I do want to see actually Justin Barron and Caden Gooley together on the second wave. But anyways, just right now, checking the stats, the Canadians dropped now to where are they? They're 23rd in the league now. Their power play is only 17%. It's 17. Their power play percentage right now is only at 17%. It's not good. It's not good at all. And you know their penalty kill is 30th in the league, with 72.4%. It's the special teams isn't. They're asking a question. Somebody, I don't know who asked the question, but it's like, why are the Canadians having a hard time winning? And it comes down to the two topics we're kind of talking about. It's the inconsistency of playing 60-minute hockey, and the special teams just hasn't been performing. They're not doing their job yet.
I don't know if you have the stats in front of you, but can we check how many penalties that the Montreal Canadiens have, and then they get penalized and they can't hold the fort. Then they get the power plays that help them either get back in the game or get ahead in the game and secure the win, and they can't bury it. So yeah, the special teams, doesn't help. It's a double whammy for the penalties is what I'm saying. Because if they're the absolute, like, if they're the freaking second worst team in terms of the second worst team in terms of penalty killing, and then they're getting the most penalties on top of it. Like, line yourself up for disaster a little bit more than that. Why don't you?
No, I totally agree. And the only thing that's the only interesting stat that I find very encouraging is that the Canadiens are leading in the league with defensemen, the goals from defensemen. Wow, I can't even speak. That's an interesting stat, though. However, I find is that the Canadiens are leading in goals amongst the defensemen. And is that an encouraging thing, or is that a bit of like a discouraging thing because you're getting goals mostly from your defensemen and not your forwards?
Well, what you would say, or the rest of the group, or the rest of the Curfew Boys would be like, well, we have a promising young youth corps. What Joey would say is, our forwards suck. They're shit. They can't score. They have no talent. So just giving the double perspective, the Curfew Boys all at once.
Mm-hmm.
But talking about that, I think it's a promising sign. I think it's very nice that we have defensemen that are contributing on points. Mm-hmm. I think we have too many defensemen. Too many defensemen means what's going to be coming? Trades. And if we have defensemen who could score goals, well, then we're going to get paid more for them. So I think it's a very promising thing no matter which way you look at it. And I'm hoping that's going to be the case. I'm hoping that they're going to be able to move some of these contracts. David Savard, keep scoring, please.
he was quite happy that he got his goal yesterday. And listen, it was a fucking a terrible giveaway by Pittsburgh, but yeah, he was at the right place at the right time, and he just happened to snipe it in. But look, Mike Matheson, 5 goals. Justin Barron, my God, what's wrong with this website? Here we go. Justin Barron, 5 goals. Jonathan Kovacevic, 4 goals. Gustav Lindstrom, 3 goals. Jaden Struble, another guy who scored yesterday, 2 goals. And him, I'd like to talk about him later on this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Caden Gooley, 2 goals. David Savard, his first goal last night. And you still got Arber Jacki, who we're definitely going to talk about later. He's got 1 goal. That's 23 goals. So at least the defense is doing something right by providing the offense. But again, it's just as a whole, collectively, part of the reason why they're not sometimes maintaining these leads And one of the reasons why they only have five regulation wins is because it's a full circle thing. It's not the incapability of playing 60-minute hockey, of keeping leads, and your special teams not doing its job. And why is it not doing its job? Well, maybe because we're not getting certain results from certain players.
I think so too.
And
I think there's honest to God, I'm gonna throw out a name that I don't think many people want to criticize, but Caulfield has not been hitting the target. He has not been shooting like we're used to seeing him shoot.
I know that he's top 10 in most shots in the league. That's the strangest part. Yes, it's not for lack of trying.
Exactly. And it's just, again, the guy is used to sniping it. I wouldn't tell him to change a single thing other than try to get it on net, because you're going to get it in more often than not. I think it's the same thing for Josh Anderson. I don't know if we're going to officially, are we diving into initial, like, sorry, the,
no,
the
we, player? Well, look, I mean, we could talk about the players too. Look, right now, Cole Caulfield has 111 shots. He's sixth overall in the league. There's Nikita Kucherov, that's first, Pasternak, McKinnon, Eichel, Phil Forsberg from Nashville, and Cole Caulfield. The thing is that his shooting percentage is at 6.3. The Kucherov, 13.9, Pasternak, 11.8, McKinnon, Eichel at 9.8, Forsberg at 13.3, Caulfield 6.3. Actually, Caulfield is tied with Austin Matthews at 111. The only thing is Austin Matthews.
Right. Who's passing to Austin Matthews as well? That's
another thing. I understand that. So it's not for lack of trying on Cole Caulfield's part. Like he's shooting a lot. We might be wondering right now, is he shooting when he's in the right area? Some are questioning, is his shoulder bugging him? Which isn't supposed to, apparently, because his shoulder's supposed to be stronger now. I don't know. I just think Caulfield's just snake bitten right now, and so is Josh Anderson. Yeah. Like they're not playing terrible hockey. Like they're not going unnoticed. They're doing all the right things except for scoring. So
yeah, 100, especially Josh. I'll go a step further. Like the Cole Caulfield, he'll be fine. I'm sure it's gonna be. I'll be 100% honest in saying I think it's just a question of time before he's gonna go on a run of like. Look at Max Pacioretty. Max Pacioretty used to go games and games and games without scoring. And he would be like two goals, one goal, three goals, one goal. And next thing you know, he's up there with some of the top scorers in the league.
But
I'm not worried for Cole, but I think Josh is thinking a lot out there. I'd say Josh as though I know him personally, but I genuinely think
he's in his own head right now. He doesn't know what the fuck to do right now anymore. Aside from just keep putting in the work, apparently his attitude is still great. Marty said it's his work ethic, his attitude, his not giving up attitude as well. There was footage of him practicing. They had another net lying on the open side, but the wider part of the net is blocking most of your regular shooting net. And so his target practice was basically from the crossbar to he maybe had 3 to 4 inches space in between. And all he kept doing was just fucking practicing shots, ripping shots bar down off. That's what he's just got to keep doing. And like, you feel for the guy. Like yesterday he was alone in the slot. Like, I don't know if it's Monahan that fed him a pass alone. Fucking Nedeljkovic just robbed him. He just robbed him. But like, he's doing the right things. He's in the right place. He's in the right spot.
That's the fucked up part. Like, he gets himself into good positions. He's working hard, and then he finally gets the shot. The poor guy, and then the goalie decides to be the second coming of Patrick Roy in that very moment.
In that moment, I know it's man, just sometimes either, I don't know, it could be you're overthinking, gripping the stick too tight. You just, it can't be that. I refuse to believe, well, he's just not good anymore. It's like, no, he scored 20 goals last year. He scored over 20 goals. Cole Caulfield knows how to score goals. Josh Anderson knows how to score goals. It's just right now, they're just so snake bitten and they're just on the wrong side of luck. Like there's no other way to explain it.
No,
I have no idea how else to explain this cold streak that they're going to.
Okay. Oh, luck is one, injuries another, special teams. Then again, well, that's losing and luck, two different things, May I do the honors? I've been wanting to for so long. For the whole month of December, I've been dying to talk. I think everybody's been dying to hear about him. I'm dying to talk about Mr. Slovakia himself.
Well, there's a big question now that I think all Habs fans are asking, wondering. Some might say yes, some might say no. Is Juraj Slafkovský here? Has he finally arrived?
I'm going to say he's knocking on the door. I still think that we're scratching the surface, but has he arrived? No. Like, am I happy with him knocking at the door and getting close to entering? 100%. He's 19 years old?
Mm-hmm.
19? Yeah.
I don't even think he's scratching the surface yet.
I don't think he's scratching the surface, but he has been, I'm not the first to say it, and I'm not ripping it off the commentators and the analysts, but he has been the best Montreal Canadiens player for the past 2 weeks, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
He has been a force. I don't know what the hell happened to the guy. I don't know if this guy is like a December just decided to become another human being, another hockey player as of the month of December. But the things that I want to highlight, I think more than anything, is all of a sudden he's still a little wobbly on his skates. He's still not 100% sure, but
not as much anymore.
Not even close to as much. He's winning one-on-one battles after one-on-one battles. He's confident. He stopped thinking. He's just doing. And he's driving the puck to the net. He's taking good shots. The passes that he's making too. Honestly, he looks like one of the best playmakers on the team with some of the passes that he makes.
Yeah.
Some of the passes are still a little bit hard at times and they're a little inaccurate.
Yeah, exactly. There's times where like he's making a beautiful pass. And then there's times where like he's overcomplicating things for nothing. Just make the simple. Yeah. When he sticks to making the simple pass, oh my God, is it beautiful?
Yeah,
it really, really is.
And 100%. And I think the most reassuring thing, again, I'm gonna say is just I'm seeing him, and I think other players were not expecting that, but he's driving the net and he's pushing guys aside and he's making space for himself and he's faster than a lot of players think. A guy his size to be as fast as he is incredible. And the only thing, if I could, again, it would be an honor to meet the guy. I think he's a great dude, very, very young kid and a lot to learn. But Slav, stop passing the puck.
Shoot the fucking thing.
The fucking puck.
Shoot the goddamn thing, man.
You've got his confidence is like battles. Oh, there's another thing that I want to say too. I'm talking about battles. I don't know what the hell that fight. Look, I think he was caught a little bit off guard and he turned the on switch on halfway through. But I think, I'm sorry to use this expression, but he had to kind of pop that cherry, if you will, to be like, You know when you don't want to fight, you've never fought before, you're scared shitless, you're like, oh my God, am I going to get my ass handed to me? Is it going to go bad? Should I be worried? Should I be stressing? I'm happy that he got it out of the way. I'm happy that he realized that he could hold his own. Yeah. Is it McEwen that he went up against? He's not a weak...
He didn't go up against a fighter on the team. It's just... I'm trying. Yeah. I don't remember who we fought against in Buffalo, but yeah, like, but yeah, I'm happy you mentioned that because it's gonna be part of the next segment. But yes, you're totally right. We're like, it's good that he got that out of his system because it shows that he could if he has to, which 99.9% of his career probably won't end up with him in fights. You know what I mean? But hey, even Sidney Crosby dropped the gloves a few times to defend himself. So good on the kid for doing that. That shootout goal for Slav to win it was a thing of beauty. And the way he did it, all the other players were going in nice and easy, taking their sweet ass time, going wide to the boards and try to cut in. Everybody's going slow. I'm like, yo, like, if you give Devin Levi time, he's going to stop you. Slav just fucking went almost full speed against Levi. And or Devin Levy, Levi, however you pronounce his name, local boy. And he deked the shit out of him. And I was saying that, I was watching it at work with my colleagues. I'm like, everybody's going slow. Going with speed. He's the one that did it. As soon as he took off, I'm like, that's it. And when he scored, I fucking jumped out of my fucking chair. My lazy boy at work. Yes. I'm pretty fortunate that I can say that. But another play too. I want to go all the way back to the Seattle game where he thought like, yeah, I'm probably not going to put up points, but I'm going to somewhat carry this team. There was that defensive play. He skates into his own zone, does a back check, retrieves the puck behind his net, skates with speed down the middle, splits the D. Do you remember that? Splits the D, gets tripped. Scream.
We were writing each other. I was screaming. I was like,
dude.
You saw it firsthand. It's true.
I saw it firsthand. I jumped out of my seat because I thought he deked it. But then when he got tripped, everybody jumped. Was, you know how the crowd is at the rest, you know, bloody screaming, bloody murder. Went on a power play. Monahan scored. It's things like that that he has to do. And that's what Marty said at the beginning when it comes to Juraj Slafkovský. As long as he trends upwards, that's what we want. There's times where he's going to have some dips, but as long as he's going upwards, the most important thing, though, about Slafkovský is, excuse me, right now, it doesn't matter about points. He doesn't have to show up on the score sheet in terms of points, goals, assists. As long as he plays the game the right way, which is what he's doing. Like you said, the same game against Seattle, he's winning these one-on-one puck battles in the corner. If you remember, we're going to probably show the highlight here on YouTube, which you should like and subscribe, by the way. He's up against the boards. There's two players trying to get the puck off him. He's looking around. He sees Suzuki and does like a fucking soccer pass kick. I that happened right in front of me. I'm there. I'm like, oh my God. Like that's have other players done it in the past? Sure. The fact that I saw Slafkovský do it made it look easy. That's what we want from the kid. It's things like that that could help you grow your confidence.
Well, continue.
That could help you grow your confidence, and therefore, it's going to help you improve your game.
1,000%. And there are three things. I'm so happy. And, you know, we might not have the most listeners just yet. We're working on growing that. But for the listeners who are, in fact, tuning in, you know, it's easy not to be patient because he's showing some signs of brilliance. But Joe Thornton did not perform right out of the gate. If you look at the point production of Joe Thornton, one of the top point scorers, eventually putting up 100-point seasons. It took him years before he figured his shit out. And the same goes for a lot of guys his stature. Okay, he's not Eric Lindros. He's not going to put up points right out of the gate. Boo-hoo. He was a first overall fucking pick. Boo-hoo. But the flashes of brilliance that he's showing, forget the points. Let him become the smart, responsible player that figures out how to use his body, that ends up becoming a force. Because if we think that Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki our dominant force, when you're going to have a guy that's a fucking built like a goddamn freight train but can move like a speed train, and perform with, I don't want to say top end talent. He might never have like these crazy McDavid hands or Patrick Kane hands. Fine, but if he can get his shot together, he can get his timing together, he can get his physicality together. That's what wins you a Stanley Cup. Those are the guys that are going to beat the shit out of the other teams
that get you through the playoffs.
And they're going to get you through the playoffs, and they're going to put again. So that's one thing. Point number two is, we said it before, I think he's only scratching the surface. We're seeing flashes of brilliance, but I think, again, there's so much more to come. Just be patient with him. Just support him. And talking about supporting him, there were a whole bunch of articles that came out that Slaf was – well, two more things, I guess. Slaf was supposed to be sent to Laval.
Yes. I wanted to mention that.
It was Marty, but Marty said, "Look, he's got to stay here. He's got to learn," and I mean, look what that did. And then there was one last point.
Well, Marty insisted that he stay here so I can work with him, me alone, because I don't know if I want JFL to work with Slafkovský. To be honest with you,
I don't. I agree with you. I don't want him. I want him to be like, okay. Okay, my God, this is just opening up. Like Slafko, this could be the Slafkovský show. I know that it's the 60-minute show, this could also be the Slafkovský show. Because, I'm going to say, I don't know what happened. And I'm going to reiterate, Slafkovský just wasn't there, might be going down to Laval. What should we be doing with him? What should we be doing with him? We haven't recorded a show in a little while, but we were at that point. On our last episode, we were at that point of questioning whether or not he should go down to Laval, and there were good arguments to be made either way. I don't know what happened to the guy, what they told him. I really don't, because he just showed up one game, and he never stopped.
No, he hasn't.
It was like an on switch. So like that's the most mind-boggling thing out of it all. It's just like he always had it, and it was like solving a math problem. Like, okay, it's solved. I figured it out. I could just go about it.
And again, it's as long as he remains consistent at the end of the day and at the end of, throughout the rest of the season. If there's one thing that I will accept and be okay with, it's like if for the rest of the year the Canadiens play like shit, but you want your Caulfield Suzuki's to play well too. But if Juraj Slafkovský is the one that's like, no, you know what? Despite the crap season we had as a team, this kid, he's come. He's arrived. Kind of like the way we felt about Kirby Dach last year. Kind of the way we felt about Cole Caulfield last year before his injury. You know what I mean? Like, despite the crappy season, like, we were happy with guys like Gouley. We were happy with guys like Kirby Dach. We were happy with guys like Arbor Jack Eye. We weren't too crazy about Slafkovský, even though him too, season-ending injury. So as long as, for me, I see the Slafkovský that we're all seeing now stay here, make progressions. I don't even care. When it comes to him, I don't even give a fuck. I don't give a fuck about the points. I really don't. As long as his play is what he's doing now or a bit better, as the season goes by, I'm willing to accept that and be happy with that.
110%. There's. I want to come back on one thing that you just said. Maybe we want to continue on the individual player, not analysis, but individual player reflection. But I do want to say something. I want, especially the young guys, and this is something that maybe we could debate at the end of the episode and think about in between time. Marty as a coach, I think it goes without a doubt, he has made individual players better, but has he made this team better? Like, in terms of playing, he's made a lot of players individually better, but has this team become better on the whole? Anyways, to be talked about later.
Well, and I mean, they're better than they were last year. A little bit. So that's progression. They probably just don't have. They're not scoring as much as they used to. But in the standings, in the standings, they're better. They're at least winning most of the time in overtime or shootout. It's a very, very good question, actually. Like I think we're still underestimating how fucking young this team is. And if, my God, I think the loss of Doc is so we're underestimating how the loss of Doc is affecting this team right now. Cause that center position and key moments would be a heck of a difference if Doc was in the lineup. You know what I mean? God bless Sean Monahan, but he's just not the same player he used to be. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, I love Sean Monahan. I just don't think he could take the workload like he used to because of his history of injuries. Otherwise, that workload would have gone to Doc. Now, you could keep Doc with Monahan, and sometimes you could split center responsibilities. But if right now, if the way it's looking, if it's Suzuki, you got Monahan, and now you got Jake Evans on the second line, Dvorak on the third, now Mitchell Stevens, God bless the guy for working hard and getting a call-up, but he's not an NHL player, Mitchell Stevens. I saw him play yesterday. The game looks way too fast for him. So, and you look at a team like Los Angeles. Why are they a well-oiled machine? Well, Jesus fucking Christ. You got Anze Kopitar, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Philippe Danault. Like, their depth at center is unreal. Much
better than that.
You're not getting better. You really won't. And it helps that Quinton Byfield woke up. Right now, it's just, again, it's a mixture of bad luck and not being able to play 60 minutes yet this year. That's why the Canadiens are. I'm telling you, if Cole Caufield would be at 10 goals right now, if Josh Anderson would even be at 5-6 goals right now, we'd probably have a few more games. If we had Kirby Doc, we'd probably have a lot more power play goals that could probably lead to wins.
Yeah. Well, think of it this way. We spoke about it earlier on in the episode, but it's overtime. Who's on the ice for that 4-on-3 power play? It's not Monahan. It's Kirby Doc. And again, no disrespect to Monahan. 1,000%. Love the guy. But Doc would fucking work magic in comparison. It would be magical in comparison.
The size, his strength, a bit of his speed too. His man, I swear to God, I hope his fucking knee injury doesn't mess up his skating ability and speed. Oh, I'm praying to the hockey gods that doesn't happen. Okay, our final topic of the episode, and this is something that's extremely interesting. Okay. It's over a week now, but we have to talk about this. We have to talk about Arbor Jack Eich getting sent down to the minors, getting sent down to the Laval Rockets, okay? I did not expect that at all. I didn't see it coming. I don't think he saw it coming. I don't think anybody saw it coming. I am not totally against this move. I'm being 100% honest with you. I'm not totally against this move. And I'm going to be quite honest with you about something. When Arbor Jack Eich made the team last year, I was shocked. Because I thought he was going to start the season in Laval. I'm talking about last season. I knew Caden Gooley was going to make the team. I think we're all like, well, Slafkovský's going to make the team first overall pick. I did not expect Arbor Jack Eich to make the team right away. I thought he was going to start his rookie season in Laval, and then he'd be a call-up later. And then it was Justin Barron that got sent down. I thought Justin Barron would have made the team. I'm okay with Arbor Jack Eich getting sent down to Laval. But I still kind of wish he was on the team, especially after that Buffalo game where things got a little bit fucking dirty. We talked about Yaroslav Slafkovský dropping the gloves. That would have never happened under Arbor Jack Eich's watch. Never. They took a run at Caufield, I think, at one point. They took another run at Slafkovský, too, in the middle of the ice. If Arbor Jack Eich was there, like, he'd go threaten these guys, be like, yo, don't fucking, don't do anything stupid. Play hockey, Don't run on my fucking guys because I'm going to come after you. I think some of the teams, I think a team like Buffalo took notice that, listen, they don't have their tough guy. Michael Pezzetta wasn't in the lineup either. It's just happy that super happy that it turned out we won in the shootout. Slafkovský, great. But after that game, like, I got frustrated. I was like, this is why you need Arbor Jacki with the Montreal Canadiens.
Yep.
But, I'm just going to say one thing, because I saw Arbor Jacki's first game in Laval. I actually was there in attendance. And a lot of people were like, he didn't play well. Like, but mind you, the whole team didn't play well against the Belleville Senators. I thought he did okay. Like, I thought he did, like, maybe he did one, he did two giveaways that, like, yeah, okay, you know, don't do that. Just keep your game simple. Apart from that, he did keep the game simple. He was a beast on the penalty kill. He was the only defenseman or the only player on Laval that was clearing the puck. And I think people expected him to be physical. I think people expect him to maybe drop the gloves. The worst thing Arbor Jacki could do is drop the gloves in the minors against some fucking plebeian plug that's going to try to fight him so he can show that, give me a shot in the big leagues, I'm dropping the glove. Arbor Jacki does not need to fight in Laval. Arbor Jacki does not need to drop the gloves in the minors. That's the worst thing that could happen to him. It's some fucking nobody that's trying to make a name for themselves that could risk some kind of injury to Arbor Jacki. Hell, we kept saying it when he was with the Canadiens. He's got to choose his opponents wisely. Don't fucking expect Arbor Jacki to drop the gloves in Laval. He's not there for that. He's there to, one, maybe control his emotions, two, play his game or improve his game a little bit more on the defensive side. And when it came, look, he's got 2 points in three games. He's doing something right.
Yeah.
He's, you know what I mean? He's on the penalty kill. He's on the power play. He's paired up with Logan Mailloux, which I fucking love personally.
Yeah.
I love those two together. They're two fucking beast of kids playing together. One's more offensive minded, the other one's a little bit more defensive minded. I think it's perfect. They're still young though. Like, they haven't, Arbor Jacki did not play a full season yet. He hasn't played over 82 games. At least I don't think he has. I'll double check that stat. But they got to play. They got to be exposed to these games. And I think this is a question I'm going to ask you, because I personally don't think so. But do you think Jaden Schrubel took Jacki's spot right now? I don't think
in part. Okay. I think in part. But I think, okay. So let's just unzip the heart. I love Jacki to the point of, like, if I were to be buying a jersey, I would consider him as one of the top options. Like, I love that style of player.
Yeah,
I love the fighters. I love what he brought to the team.
Only 68 NHL games. That's still rookie numbers, guys. He's still a rookie. Kinda. Yeah.
I think what bit him in the ass, this year, is he was taking too many penalties at the wrong time. I'm never going to say he wasn't sticking up for players, but last year he was an intimidating factor. Like, he had guys fucking really looking over their shoulders and worrying about going in a one-on-one matchup. He had them worrying, and he was, like I said, he was a scary dude. Would I consider him as scary this year? Was he as intimidating? No. And if he's not going to be that, and I'm not asking him to be that intimidation factor,
but he has to be.
Struble. Yeah, he's strong. He's very strong even. But he's not, like, nobody in that locker room is as tough as Arbor Jacki. Nobody keeps the other team in line as much as Arbor Jacki. But at a certain point, you have to play hockey. If you're getting penalties and you might not have some of the fundamentals, yeah, maybe it's time to go down to the minors and work on some of the fundamentals. Play as many minutes as possible. Play 25, play 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Get as much as experience as possible. Get those touches on the puck that you're not going to get as much of because you're playing on the second or third pairing of defense. So if and it makes sense to me, if he's not dropping the gloves and fighting these fucking plugs down in the minors, that's probably Kent Hughes saying, look, you are an absolutely essential part of this team. You're going down not to fight. You're going down to get all those touches on the puck. You're going down there to potentially play with your future partner, Logan Mayu. Yeah, maybe. That would be a destructive, murderous fucking defensive pairing.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think Mayu's going to be higher up. Let me not get too distracted on that. Okay. I just think he's going there to work on maybe his hockey skills. Let's say his hockey playing skills, touches on the puck,
I agree with that, and I think that's what that is. I don't think,
because it
came after his injury though. So like,
yeah,
could this also be a conditioning stint as well? A little bit.
It could be a conditioning stint. I thought about that too. Maybe he was ordered like, hey, don't fight, don't whatever. Maybe they don't want to expose him to, yeah, maybe they're putting him down in the minors to keep his conditioning up. But at the same time, he's got a few more. I'm telling you right now, you don't have to tell you, but just saying it out loud, you're in the minors. You have maybe a split second. You may have even a full second, a second and a half before you're getting hit. Contrary to when you're up playing up top, you don't have that additional time and you don't have that additional space. So anyways, that's that. And I wanted to say, Arbor, I'm okay with him being there if it's for developmental purposes and he's not fighting and he's not going crazy. If he has to work on a few things and buy himself some time, perfectly fine. If the Canadians are also trying to showcase some of their other defensemen, and that would mean him playing less minutes, again, I'm okay with him going down to Laval. He's also one of the few defensemen that wouldn't have had to pass through waivers. Makes sense there again.
Yeah.
But... games like we had, like you mentioned, against the Buffalo Sabres, I wanted to fucking drive. I wanted to drive to Buffalo.
And I was getting frustrated, man. Oh yeah, my God.
Tage Thompson, the fake tough guy who got the shit kicked out of him already in the past. That motherfucker who's taking runs at Caulfield.
Yeah, that too. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to know what, Jack? I would be like, listen.
No, I don't give a fuck who you are. Don't touch him.
You touch him one more time, I'm going to fucking reorient your face. And yeah, you're not going to fucking chew properly for the next weeks. Mr. Jack Eye.
But the thing is, I still think even with Jack Eye there, maybe Tage Thompson wouldn't have taken a run at Caulfield. Exactly. And maybe I'm convinced that. I'm convinced that to this day, right now. I don't think Slavkovsky drops the gloves. I don't think Tage Thompson takes a run at Caulfield. And this is why I like Michael Pezzetta. Michael Pezzetta wasn't in the lineup either. Yeah. I find Michael Pezzetta tough. Maybe not as tough as Jack Eye, but I think the second toughest guy on the team is probably him.
Well, you know what? Mitchell Stevens agreed with that, agreed with Pezzetta being the second toughest guy. And I think that Pezzetta, as the expression goes, I rather have Pezzetta in the lineup over fucking Mitchell Stevens. I think Mitchell Stevens is taking up space and taking up ice time for no good reason. Thank you for your service. And it's cruel for me to talk like that because these guys are better hockey players than I'll ever dream of being. And we treat them like shit because they're not one of the 700 best players in the world who are playing in the big league or deserve to be playing in the big leagues. But that said, Mitchell Stevens, I'm sorry, bud, but
it's unfortunate.
I would take Pezzetta just to keep police. I'd rather have a police officer like Pezzetta. Like,
a 1,000%. And I would look, now that Emil Heinemann got called up because of the Tanner Pearson injury, I would give, this is the lineup I would do right now, just to have Pezzetta in the lineup, just because we're talking about toughness here. I would put Jake Evans back at the fourth line. I have Pezzetta there, and you either put Either you keep Alonen in there, or you give Emil Heinemann on the fourth line. Maybe give Jesse Olenin a shot on the second line or on the third line or something. Yeah. I don't know, but I want Pezzetta in the lineup because of that toughness factor.
I do too. And you know what? Thank you so much for bringing up Ilonen's name. That guy, if there's one guy who deserves a shot, oh my God, he's got hands. He's a good hockey player.
Filthy in the shootout too, and that's why he's given that opportunity. I want to go back to the defense though. Jaden Schrubel deserves to stay with the Canadiens.
He does, without a doubt.
And you think Arbor Jack guy is going to be paired up with Mayu in the future? I don't think so. You want to know who the third pairing is going to be? Before you say it. Yep.
I want to answer because you asked the question. No, yep. I actually, now that I think about it, it's going to be like Gouli and Mayu.
I see Gouli
and Mayu. Probably Hudson and Reinbacher, or vice versa. Those are going to be your top four.
Let's say this is the lineup of a contending Montreal Canadiens. Now, to this day, I'm still convinced it's going to come down between Mayu and Barron. I don't think you could have both in your lineup. I don't think you could have both within your three pairings because they're similar players. Mayu's bigger. Mayu's supposed to be stronger and a little bit more physical than Barron is. And I like Justin Barron. This is not a knock on Justin Barron. I just think maybe if Mayu progresses like he could be, maybe he threatens a spot for Barron. Right now, Jaden Schrubel, in my eyes and opinion, he's threatening Jordan Harris's spot.
Thank you for.
And you know, the ironic thing is they were teammates at Northeastern University in the NCAA, and they won together. That's the most ironic part. But right now, Jaden Schrubel is threatening Jordan Harris's spot, in my opinion. And I love Jordan Harris. I think the only upper hand that Jordan Harris has over Schrubel is that Harris is probably a little bit more of a cerebral defenseman in a sense. I think he's got a bit more of that hockey sense as a defenseman more than Schrubel. But I don't think Schrubel's far behind now. Schrubel definitely has a more physical edge to his game. And I think he's catching up to Harris right now. Let me ask you this though. Come playoff time, where things get rough,
you know,
things get rugged. So this is why I'm gonna say this. I have to say this. I see a pairing of Jack Eye and Schrubel as a third pairing penalty kill, if and when the Canadiens become playoff contenders.
1,000%. I will say something contrary to you. I don't think Logan Mayu threatens. I think he beats the shit out of Justin Barron, takes that spot. Whenever he's ready, that switch is getting made. I seriously do think. I keep mentioning this is going to be my trademark on our show. I keep saying that our defensemen are going to be the key pieces that are going to lead to getting. Our acquisitions, especially on the forward side, be time to compete. Jordan Harris and Barron are going to be two defensemen who are worth quite a lot. I'm not going to say they're worth the first round picks and all this and that, but like I still think, actually the reverse might be true. But I think these young defensemen, because they're still going to be very young. I think these are the guys that are going to be traded away with picks to go fetch a veteran forward who's dominant, who's still dominant, or not even a veteran force, but like again, just a key player to go compete in the playoffs. And I have no problem with that. I'm going to be honest in saying, like, I hope Barron, I hope Harris, and I hope Kovacevic end up being players that get in the future.
I guess assets in the future. I could probably see that happening. Now, I could maybe also see Kovacevic being either the seventh defenseman.
Yeah.
Okay. But then again, it all depends what Adam Engström does when he comes from Sweden next year.
Yeah.
That's another guy that sounded more like Finnish. But anyways, no.
Yeah, that was closer to the.
I don't know. I don't know the, any of the Scandinavian accents, but I again, you're gonna have to look at. You're gonna have to keep an eye on Adam Engstrom. Eventually, one day, you're gonna have to keep an eye on. I'm gonna go get his name, but the Russian defenseman right now that's turning heads in the KHL that got drafted this year, the same draft of Reinbacher. I have it right here, Bogdan Konyushkov, a right-handed defenseman. Okay, he's 20 years old. And he's already got 20 points in 40 games in the KHL. Last season, he had 25 points in 64. Granted, 4 goals, and European leagues are way different. I get it. Some of them are a lot tougher than we think. I'm just saying, like, there's a surplus of defensemen that the Canadiens could use as trade bait too. Like you said, acquire pieces that could help with this rebuild, or just add another missing piece here or there to either bring toughness or something. Maybe not exactly a veteran in his 30s, but someone in his mid to late 20s that's still got a bit of mileage in him, a little bit more like when Josh Anderson came here, but it could be something along the lines. Who knows? But right now, I know I want to see Arber Jacki back in the lineup ASAP.
Yeah,
but that's just my thing. Like, I'm trying to look at it in an asset management way. And like, he even told reporters, so he's like, they told me why, and it does make sense as to how they want me to develop and all that. So, like, well, he didn't say those exact words, but it's definitely, I think it's a mixture of a conditional stint and a work on his defensive game / his emotions.
Yeah, I don't see why it would be, and I guarantee, I'm not in the organization, I don't know shit, but my head, my heart, my gut feel says beyond the shadow of a doubt, in comparison with other players like Yoel Armia, and for example, Yoel Armia should not have been an easy send down, but I'm telling you, it was probably harder for this Montreal Canadiens group to send down Arber Jacki than it was to send down Yoel Armia. And I guarantee you the picture was painted perfectly so that Jacki understood this, you are so important to this organization.
Yep.
You're not going anywhere. We value you. We need you to do this, this, and this so that you can come back even better. And
I think so too.
And again, maybe the same type of thing is he's forward versus defenseman, but I love going back to that example. Second time we mentioned him this episode, Max Pacioretty. Different, because I don't see Jacki saying this. I think Jacki would have preferred being up. But it is, the logic is there. When Pacioretty was like,
if you're not going to play me, send me down. Yeah.
If you're not going to play me, like, send me down, let me develop. And look, when he finally came back up, he came back up to stay. And that was it.
I think it's not exactly the same.
No, but
I get what you're saying. I think Jacki is humble enough to not go down that route. But I think it could have shattered or hurt his ego a little bit. And I think it's normal. You know, you become an inspiration to a lot of the kids. Like, you're not drafted at all. You cracked the NHL lineup, not ever getting drafted. Everybody was always against you, saying you probably weren't good enough. Then you go beat the shit out of Zach Cashin. You end his NHL career practically. Then you get the title of like the sheriff. You do the fucking the burger commercial. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden you lose all of that by getting sent down to the minors. Not that he lost it. I don't think he lost it. But, you know, really keep that title. Dude, you fucking put Ryan Reeves through the fucking goalie net, okay, in the first game of the season. You know what I mean? Like, so there had to have been it for sure hurt him. I'm not saying he's a very egotistical person. I don't think he is. I think he's a very humble person, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure somewhere deep down inside, he's like, fuck, like, what did I do wrong? Like, oh, why am I getting set down? But then again, as long as he shows good attitude, he puts in the work, he shows up to work every day, he shows up to play. And if he does the same thing in the minors, just, you know what, plays a simple defensive game, but looks after his teammates as well without having to drop the gloves, it won't be long until we see Jack Eye again with the Canadiens.
100%. And again, for him personally, I hope it's not the case. For him coming back to Montreal for that sake, I hope it hurt him. I hope it fucking hurt him really bad. I hope he comes back angrier and meaner than he ever has. I hope it marks him and it makes, like, use it as fuel, kid. You're sure.
Totally. I'm gonna play the best hockey I can so I never get set down. Don't forget, he's a restricted free agent. He's playing for a contract at the end of this year, huh? So that's gonna be interesting to see too. Like, the fact that he is sent down to the minors, depending how soon he comes back to the big leagues, is that gonna affect a bit of his worth or his contract signing? It's very interesting to see what Arbor Jack, but I still think he's a detrimental key piece to this rebuild. And a guy like him, you're gonna need a guy like him for the playoffs. That's why Vancouver went and get a guy like Nikita Zadorov.
Oh my god. I'll be honest and say it.
I'm just apparently saying
Boston and Toronto.
Toronto wanted this guy badly.
I'm so happy because me that's too. Exactly why Toronto's gonna lose. They suck. They're a bunch of softy pieces of shit. Well, they're pieces of shit just because they're from Toronto, but they're softies. Just
because they're the Leafs. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Let's see.
No. All right. We're gonna end the episode. A big congratulations to Habs prospect Owen Beck, who made the Team Canada roster. I should have mentioned this at the beginning of the episode since we were talking about the World Juniors, but congratulations, Owen Beck, actually making the roster out of their camp and not being a call-up because of an injury to, ironically enough, Colton Doc, the younger brother of Kirby Doc. No, Owen Beck made the team. He's there to stay. Hopefully he doesn't get injured, stays healthy, has an excellent tournament. Bring the fucking gold back home, boys, like we did last year and the year before that. I'm excited for that tournament. The other Habs prospects that are trying to play for their country, we got Philip Mishar, who's having an excellent junior season with the Kitchener Rangers. I truly think he's going to get selected with Slovakia. And then you have Lane Hutson and goaltender Jacob Fowler, who are going to try to get a spot, most likely are going to get a spot with Team USA. So that's all I got, folks. That's all I got, Chris. I don't know if you have anything else to add, but I'm pretty much...
Slavkovsky. Please keep going. I want to make this one last analogy. Slavkovsky, I laughed, I chuckled when we made the comparison. Could he ever become anywhat similar to one of the Tkachuk brothers? I don't think we're as far away from that being a possibility as we were. I don't think it was imaginable a few weeks ago.
Before we end this off, like, I can't believe you mentioned his name, but can you imagine if we would have had on the left side a fucking Brady Tkachuk and a Juraj Slafkovsky?
Oh, have a good night, folks. And,
fuck. No. You know what?
Hurts.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. I hate playing against a Brady Tkachuk, but I actually really like him.
Goes without saying.
I like Brady Tkachuk. I hate when we play against him. I would hang out with Brady Tkachuk any fucking day. I've actually gained quite a bit of respect for him throughout the years. Because I think he's, I don't even know why we're talking about Brady Tkachuk, because I think he's just matured when he got the captaincy. To me, there was a video of him supporting his brother in Calgary wearing a Calgary Frames t-shirt, grabbing some random kid, putting him on his shoulders and fucking partying it up in a sense with him. I'm there. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I like this guy. But all that to say is if Juraj Slafkovsky can make us forget probably we'll never forget that we did not select Brady Tkachuk. But yeah, if Juraj Slafkovský can be a, like a Tkachuk type player, these other teams have a bit of another thing coming. He's still 19 years old. He's still young. There's still lots and lots and lots of time for this kid. And I can't wait.
There's a lot of aggression that still has to be acquired. I'm going to say it has to be instilled in him a little bit. I think it came a little bit more naturally, but if he keeps going down this path, and that's why I talked about it earlier in the episode, and I want to finish off with it. Slav, keep fighting, keep for every single inch, keep pushing. It's time to get your nose dirty and really fight for it, because if he keeps doing that, fucking guy is going to be the best player on his respective team, and he's going to be a dominant force for years to come. Goal-wise, maybe not. Points-wise, maybe not. But just a force.
If he shoots, I think he could score 20.
Oh, my God. At least. But Slav, keep on going. The rest of the team, keep on going. Cole, let's see some goals from you.
Yeah.
And other than that.
Next game against the New York Islanders Saturday night at the Bell Center. Hopefully they can get a 2 points. So that's it. That's all for us, folks. Thank you very much for tuning in to a brand new episode of the Curfew Boys podcast. You can hear all our episodes in person or see our lovely faces on YouTube. Please like and subscribe. Tell your friends about us. It's free. Help us grow this page. You can hear all our episodes audio format on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or any podcast platform. We're on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. We're on Twitter. Give us a follow there too. Join the conversation. Tell us what your thoughts are on some of the topics we spoke tonight. Let us know what you think. Chris, thanks for joining me on this episode, Family Edition. Go Habs go. Enjoy the game Saturday. I know I will. And until next time. Bye now.
Bye now.
Good night.